Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Balabha Giribhara Hari. Gopi Jana Balabha Giribhara Hari. Yashodanandana Braja Janarandana Yashodanandana Braja Janarandana Yamunatiravanachari Jamunatira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari Jaya Radha Madhava Gopi Jana Balabha Giribhara Hari Gopi Jana Balabha Giribhara Hari Yashodanandana Braja Janaranjana Yashodanandana Braja Janaranjana Yamunatiravanachari Yamunatiravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivijacharya Ashto Tarasari Sri Sri Mahadis Divine Grace Sri Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivijacharya Ashto Tarasari Sri Sri Mahadis Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasari Thakur Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Goti Vaishnava Brinda Ki Jai Iskan Bibiti Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Iskam Guru Vindaki Jai, Prem Sakaho, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Sri Vasari, Gaur Bhakta Vindaki Jai, Sri Sri Radha Krishna, Gaur Gopinath, Shyamakun, Radhakun, Giri Govardhana Ki Jai, Sri Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai, Sri Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai, Tulsi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Ganga Jamuna Maya Ki Jai, Sankirtan Jagna Ki Jai, Brihat Madanga Chansana Bhaktishtibhushana Ki Jai, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatama Ki Jai, The Transcendental Lordship, Sri Sri Gornitai Ki Jai, Sri Sri Krishna Balarama Ki Jai, Sri Sri Radha Shama Sundar Ki Jai, Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda, Samaveda Bhakta Vinda Ki Jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Sri Guru Angad. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Devaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 60. Chapter is entitled Krishna Teases Rukmini, and today we've got 10 through 12. So, I guess maybe we can just start by reading or chanting in unison 10 and 11, and then we'll responsibly do 12. So we can chant this together. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Raja Putipshita Pupaya Loka Pala Vibhutibi Mahanu Bhavai Shri Madhbi Ropa Darya Bhagavatitai. The Supreme Lord said, "My dear princess, you were sought after by many kings as powerful as the rulers of planets. They were all abundantly endowed with political influence, wealth, beauty, generosity, and physical strength. Tan praptan artino hitva chaya din smara mumagam tata bratra chitra cha kashman nova vise saman. Since your brother and father offered you to them, why did you reject the king of Chedi and all those other suitors who stood before you maddened by Cupid? Why instead did you choose us who are not at all your equal?" Okay, so we'll do this text 12 responsively. Raja Bhyo Bibhyata Subhu Samudram Sharanam Gatan Balavadbi Krita Dveshan Krayas Chaktva Nipasanan Rajabhyo Bibhyata Subhu Samudram Sharanam Gatan Balavadbi Krita Dveshan Rayas Chaktva Nipashanan. Please chant. Rajabhya, of the kings, Bibhyata, afraid. Subru, O lovely browed one. Samudram, to the ocean. Sharanam, for shelter. Gatan, gone. Balavadvi, towards those who are powerful. Kritadveshan, having showed enmity. Praya, for the most part. Jakta, having abandoned. Nripa, of a king. Asanan, the seat. Translation and purport by followers of Srila Prabhupada. Terrified of these kings, O lovely browed one, we took shelter in the ocean. We have become enemies of powerful men, and we practically abandoned our royal throne. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on this verse as follows. The Lord's mentality here can be understood as follows. When I gave Rukmini a single flower from the heavenly Parijata tree, Satyabhama showed such a torrent of fury that I could not pacify her even by bowing down at her feet. Only when I gave her a whole Parijata tree was she satisfied. Rukmini, however, did not display any anger even when she saw me give Satyabhama the whole tree. So how can I enjoy the nectar of angry words from this wife who never feels jealousy, who is supremely sober and who always speaks pleasingly? Thus considering, the Supreme Lord decided, if I speak like this to her, I will be able to provoke her anger. This is how some authorities explain Krishna's speech to Rukmini. According to the Acharya, here are the words Balavadbi Krita Dweshan Praya indicates that Lord Krishna opposed almost all the contemporary kings during his incarnation, befriending only a few, such as the Pandavas and loyal members of his dynasty. Of course, as stated in the beginning of the 10th canto, Lord Krishna appeared specifically because the earth was overburdened by innumerable bogus kings. And he wanted to remove this burden. Finally, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that the word Jakta Nipashanam, giving up the king's throne, indicates that after Lord Krishna killed Kamsa, he humbly gave the royal throne to his grandfather Ugrasena, although the Lord himself was entitled to it. Translation again. Terrified of these kings, O lovely browed one, we took shelter in the ocean. We become enemies of powerful men, and we practically abandon our royal throne. Om Ganatimananda Shaganandana Shilakaya Chakshur Umritam Gina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this is a very unique pastime in that it's a, in some ways we could say it's an emulation of what goes on in the material world in terms of marital relationships. Oftentimes marriages are plagued with tit-for-tat, so much disagreement, and in some ways it adds spice to the relationship. There's a give and take, and there's a struggle to maintain stability. So this is actually described in the purport later in the chapter, how it's Krishna is, and Rukmini are playing the role of like humans and taking on these characteristics. Now, Krishna goes ahead, but this is Before I go any further, I've brought it into the kind of the mundane realm, but this is a completely transcendental platform. And Krishna goes, it continues up to verse 20, text 20, by describing his disqualifications to be her husband. And it's very self-effacing. Here he's describing how I've made enemies with powerful men. You know, I was fearful, so I took shelter in the ocean. I abandoned the throne. And it goes on. And, you're dealing with someone that no one can be sure of. He's just an uncertain person. And he acts against ordinary standards of behavior. And he doesn't have any good qualities. And he's praised by beggars. You know, he's renounced everything. He doesn't have any property. And he has a complete lack of desire for family life, for maintaining a family. He's not interested in the body. And so that brings it up to verse 20. And in 17, he actually says to Rukmini, you know, it'd be a lot better if he just found another husband. So, now Rukmini, of course, she's just like devastated. You know, she's, you know, Krishna's always been so kind to her, never left her side. And now all of a sudden, this incredibly difficult circumstance has come. And she's just beside herself with anxiety. And so then she starts manifesting these sattvika bhavs. Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu describes that on the basis of being situated in the Vishuddha Sattva, you know, that the heart's impregnated with the Vishuddha Sattva internal potency, that these involuntary things start taking place. And, you know, stimulated by Krishna's speech, you know, in this place, in this situation, he's the vibhav. And then she just goes, like, she just feels so bad. You know, she starts crying. She, you know, this incredible anxiety manifests in her heart, this fear. And, then finally she loses consciousness. And she just faints. And, it wasn't exactly now as it's described here in the purport. Krishna's intention was to make her angry, and it didn't work. You know, something else happened. You know, she just like was devastated by it. So then he's sitting on the bed while he's, you know, speaking these really harsh words to her, and then he gets off of the bed, and he manifests four arms. You know, and I'm sorry, I hope I'm not preempting the subsequent class givers, but I'm just kind of giving an overview of the chapter to put it in a perspective where I can take it ahead. But he jumps off the bed, you know, he picks her up, and he smooths her hair out, and he caresses her, and he needed all four arms to do that. That's why he manifested the four arms. And, you know, she comes back to consciousness, and then he starts speaking very sweet words to her. And, you know, gradually, you know, she understands, you know, he admits that I was just speaking joking words to you to get you angry because I wanted to enjoy that side of you. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that she didn't get angry, but actually it wasn't disappointing to Krishna. He was even more enlivened because of her response, the humility and the deep love that she had for Krishna. So it was even more favorable. And that's what sattvika bhavs do. They enhance the ecstasy that goes further and further into the mellow, into the ras, into the taste. The pleasure that's exchanged becomes so much greater. So it worked. So then... After pacifying Rukmini, then Krishna he kind of just takes a back seat, and then Rukmini takes over, and all of the negative things, all the self-effacing points that Krishna made about himself, Rukmini responded, and turned them into glorifications. I won't go into all the details, I'll save that for later classes. But it was so sweet for Krishna to hear all of this. So then he responded by just glorifying her and how fortunate he was to have such a wife. And, you know, it was just such a, you know, grand ending, you know, such a seemingly romantic ending. But this is, we understand that Rukmini, you know, she's an expansion of Srimati Radharani. She's the foremost queen of Krishna, a very, very exalted position. And this is actually a very high level of transcendental pastimes that are taking place. So how do we understand this? What is the, how can we really connect with this and relate to this? In the last few weeks, different devotees have revealed, you know, in discussions, you know, the challenges that they experience, you know, with these pastimes, you know, how to really understand them, how to connect with them, how to see them as, you know, I hate to say it, but sometimes there's a tendency, you know, for, like Hare Krishna Prabhu, when he gave class the last time, I asked him about, well, how do we process this personalism of the Supreme Lord? And then he told his history, you know, how he, when he first read Krishna book after 10 pages, here he is a microbiologist, he had to close the book, it was too much for him. And the same thing happened with the Nectar Devotion. I'm not getting on Hare Krishna's case, but the point is that it's sometimes challenging us for us to access these personal pastimes, this lila of the Lord, and really connect with it and internalize the message that Krishna is giving us through these pastimes. So there's in the 20th chapter of the Nectar Devotion, which is the beginning of the southern division of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And this southern division, is it southern or northern? I think it's northern, actually. I think it's a northern division, sorry. It's different divisions of the ocean of nectar. Prabhupada, he understands, and there's, it starts out with a discussion of these, of rasa. Actually, this whole division is on rasa. But there's an introductory, you know, Rupa Goswami makes some introductory comments and introduces vibhava, anubhava, sapika bhava, gabichari bhava, and stayi bhava. And then Prabhupada, he says this is a very high level of transcendence and very difficult for us to understand. But I'll try my best to convey this to you. This is basically what he's saying. I'm paraphrasing it. And then he makes an interesting point that kind of brings it home. He says, generally this mellow, of course mellow means rasa, is experienced by chanting, hearing, worshiping in the temple, and being engaged in the service of the Lord. So now, here's how I put it onto the platform that we can understand. This is what the sadhaka experiences. It's the green mango, ripe mango progression. So the green mango, we experience this taste, you know, when this pleasure, some bliss. It's not anywhere near what's experienced on the platform of bhava. It's just a sneak preview, but it's there. So this is how we can connect with this. And this is the point that Prabhupada, you know, he's making it like Sukadeva Goswami. He's not just parrot in the sense that he's repeating in parampara, but he's making it sweeter. And that sweetness, in the purport there, Prabhupada describes, you know, how realization means to make it accessible, to present it in such a way that it's understandable to the audience. So, you know, I thought of, you know, here's Rukmini in this incredibly transcendentally distressed circumstance. So, you know, how do we understand this? How can we, as sadhakas, really connect with this and have a, you know, kind of a, have it be really meaningful to us? Does Krishna ever do anything like that with us to deepen our devotion? Let me stop here and ask each of you to reflect. And this is a personal question, and we're going to take a straw vote. How many of you, when you took up Krishna consciousness, you were prompted by a relatively high level of distress in your life? If that was a causative factor in your taking up Krishna consciousness, please raise your hand. So, and those that had other reasons for coming, raise your hand. There's a lot of people that came in a higher level. This is that kind of the entry level for doing it. But generally speaking, you know, there was a poll done of new devotees in India, and that was about 90% came from that. This is a report I got from Radhisham, you know, the temple president in Pune. So that's a factor. Now, interestingly enough, here's one of my favorite references, because after all, we're in Kali Yuga, and Kali Yuga is pretty much an ocean of distresses. It's specifically designed that way. You know, it's that season in the cycle. And there's a verse, and you can all look it up and reflect on it later. It's an easy one to remember, the numbers. It's 1.9.19. Some of you probably think, oh, Jamashmi is going to talk about this again, because I've said this to different devotees that are in the room. But this is in 1.9.19. Okay, so 1919. And this is in the passing of Bhishma Dev. And Bhishma Dev, he's on his bed of arrows, pretty highly distressed, in, you know, situation that he's in. And, you know, he's helping Yudhishthira Maharaj process his despondency that's come about as a result of the, you know, so many people being killed, and he saw that they were killed, and he felt responsible for it because it was so that he could be enthroned. So, you know, he's preaching to Yudhishthira. So in the purport, there's a very interesting series of points that Prabhupada makes that really connects with what we're talking about today. And he describes different bhavs that Krishna has with his devotees. And he starts with this relationship that Jashoda Mai has with him, this loving parental bhav. You know, he mentions the Damodar Lila. And then he goes on and describes the Sakya Ras of Krishna and Arjuna, how Krishna became his chariot driver. And it was so deeply, had such deep affection for each other and friendship. Then he mentions the relationship with Sukadeva Goswami and the four Kumaras, and, you know, how they came to pure devotion, you know, by this relationship. And then he says something that's very, very interesting. Prabhupada says that the tribulations a devotee undergoes are another transcendental bhav with the Lord. So it's actually just as Krishna with Rukmini has put her in a very, very high level of distress. Of course, this is all transcendental. She's not really, this is a sattvika bhav, it's an ecstasy. So this loving exchange of experiencing some distress as a devotee, and that's what it is. It's a loving exchange. Now, this is something that completely is beyond the scope of understanding of the materialist. He's in the material world thinking himself the center of the universe, and everything he's trying to arrange so that he optimizes his sensual pleasure and avoids as much as possible, tries to overcome any type of distressful situation, goes to, you know, all ends to, if he's in distress, to get out of it, just, you know, manipulate so many different things to try and get out of distress or avoid it. So, but for a devotee, it's a little different thing. And this comes like just like the second verse of the Bhagavatam. Dharma projita kaitavo tra paramo nirantaranam satam vedyam vastavam atra vastu shivanam tapatrayamunanam Srimad Bhagavate Mahamune Kute Kim Va Parayeshwaraha Sadyo Vidya Vedudite Kutibi Shushubish Tatsana. So this, and what I'm going to focus on is the second line, Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu Shivadam Tapa Trayan Mulanam. So, okay, the first line, of course, don't, let's not leave that. Completely rejecting, projita, all religious activities which are materially motivated. The Srimad Bhagavatam propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those who are fully pure in heart. Okay, so what is that highest truth? The highest truth distinguishes reality from illusion. So that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We're surrounded by his energies. His energies are both spiritual and material, internal and external. And we are his servants. Okay, so that's the highest truth. So when one understands that, everything becomes auspicious when one actually internalizes that. So then what has that got to do with Tapa Trayan Mulanam? It uproots the threefold miseries, the Adi-Daivaka Klesha, the Adi-Atmaka Klesha, and Adi-Bodhaka Klesha. These threefold miseries, you know, coming from our minds, our bodies, the external energy from other jivas. How does that work? How can that take place? It seems it's connected with understanding the absolute truth, understanding a relationship with him. So as I mentioned earlier, the materialist, he's trying his best to, you know, he's in a competitive modality with the Supreme Lord. He actually wants to be the center of the universe. So all of his is driving for that. Everything he's doing is trying to enjoy whatever he's surrounded by. It's for his pleasure, his happiness. That's what he's looking for. And it's on a sensual material platform. So the distresses that he gets, it makes him extremely unhappy. So how can that be a loving exchange for a devotee? Well, let's get some little bit more tapha here so that this will become understandable. And Prabhupada, at the time of initiation, he's told us that we're freed from all sinful reactions. Now, how does that work? Because many of you in the room have taken initiation, but yet I think all of you can attest to probably within the last 24 hours you've experienced some form of distress. That's, you know, how sinful reactions manifest to us. So this seems a little complicated. Now, Giriraj Swami, in a 1992 Nectar Devotion course in Vrindavan, spoke about how Prabhupada revealed that that at this time, when the fans unplugged, and in other words, when the sinful reactions are taken on, when Prabhupada takes the sinful reactions on of us, or his gurus representing him, you know, the current gurus, then Krishna takes charge of those sinful reactions, and he uses them to help the devotee. In Brahma Samhita, it's described karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajan, that for a devotee, he's no longer under the laws of karma. Okay, so more tattva. We go to now 10:14:8, the Mahavakyam for processing distress. Tateno kampam shukshamikshamano bunjani vatma kritam vipakam ridvag vapabir vidadan namaste jiveta yo mukti pade satayapak. One who always seeks your compassion and thus tolerates all kinds of adverse conditions, understanding that they're coming about as a result of one's past misdeeds. I'll put in parentheses there. But he also understands that they're not coming about, that it's not under the laws of karma. And he goes on, if there's any confusion on that, I'll clarify that. And he goes on rendering service with body, mind, and words, offering obeisances from the very core of his heart. Then that person becomes eligible to enter into pure devotional service, or to go back to Godhead. Prabhupada says on page 91, the Nectar to Devotion, the subheading is Expecting the Lord's Mercy, that this should be the guide for all devotees, this verse. Okay, so in the purporting, there's a description of how Krishna puts a devotee. There's a description of the law of karma, how the law of karma is has a rectificatory, is that the right word? It rectifies the jiva from, you know, he does something wrong, and then there's a reaction to it, which enables him to not want to do what he did wrong again. You know, kind of like it's a slap on the back of the hand. Okay, so that's a very slow and indirect process. But then when one takes up devotional service, he takes diksha, you know, the fan's unplugged, but it's still spinning, and that spinning is directly under the control of Krishna. He's taken charge of your sinful reactions, and he uses them to help you with your devotion. In this purport to 1.9.19, or no, not in the purport, in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary to that, he says that Krishna puts a devotee in distress to deepen his devotion. Okay, still, it may not resonate with all of you. I was talking with one devotee that was saying to me just a few days ago, but I want things to be nice, and I don't want to go through all this. And so how does that work? How can we actually see that this is a loving exchange, that Krishna's engaging with us? You know, if we see it that way, boy, it'd be a lot easier to process, for sure. You know, rather than just getting banged around, you know, someone just said something to me, completely blew me away. You know, I can't stand to be around this person anymore, you know, and oh, I'm so disturbed by it. Is there another way of dealing with this? So if it's actually Krishna's loving exchange, then that would mean that experience, rather than becoming degraded by our mental activity, could actually elevate us. So how can we see this? How can we actually understand that? And so there's in the purporting to 10:14:8, I digressed a little bit, there's this unpacking of the law of karma, but then a similar thing happens. It kind of parallels the law of karma, but it's directly under Krishna's control, to eradicate the vestiges of the enjoying spirit in the heart of the devotee so that he can come to him. He's removing, you know, that enjoying spirit through these distresses so that he'll take shelter. Now, there's a very interesting progression that takes place, or a series of verses. It begins with 11:5:32. Now, this is a very famous verse which predicts Lord Chaitanya's advent. Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Sango Pankashtra Parshajam Jagnaya Sankirtana Prayer Yajanti Hi Samedasa. So in the age of Kali, intelligent persons perform the congregational chanting, the holy name, to worship the incarnation of Krishna, who's not blackish in color, got a golden complexion, is accompanied by servants, weapons, and confidential companions. So after that, there's a description, you know, of how Kali Yuga, this is Lord Chaitanya coming, Then it's describing, you know, how the sages in Satyayuga worship Kali Yuga because the Yuga Dharma is so powerful that it elevates people to the highest levels of Krishna consciousness. Sages in Satyayuga. Hey, come on. We've all been in Kali Yuga. We know how crazy it is. Here's the sages of Satyayuga worshiping Kali Yuga, wanting to take birth in Kali Yuga because of the Yuga Dharma. And then it describes this description is a combination of the translations and also the commentaries of the Acharyas of how the suffering is so intense in Kali Yuga that people are forced to take shelter of the holy name. And when they do take shelter of the holy name, then they become quickly elevated to the highest platforms of Krishna consciousness. So all of you are aware of Prabhupada's very famous Maha Mantra address, where he glorifies the holy name. And there's this one very famous sentence where he describes the chanting of Hare Krishna. He likens it to the cry, the genuine cry of a child for his mother. So these distressful circumstances make it a lot easier for us to cry. And when we do, when we take shelter, rather than feeling sorry for ourselves, we recognize this is actually Krishna coming to us to wake us up, to remind us that this material world is not a place to enjoy, that it's his external energy, that, and we're meant to use it in his service. As soon as we do that, as soon as we cry to him and go through this paradigm shift of wanting to use everything in his service, rather than being the master, be the servant of Krishna, then the whole atmosphere changes. That material energy, there's a really incredible verse, I believe it's 1.13.31, where Prabhupada describes it, the omnipotence of the Lord. He has all these energies. So for the materialist, the external energy illusions him. And that same external energy for a devotee is transformed by the Lord into the internal energy to take him back to Godhood. So depending upon our attitude, you know, if we're in the master mode, then, you know, we're trying to enjoy and control and be the center of the universe, that energy illusions us. You know, when the distresses come, because they're going to come, the way we process the distress is, oh, woe is me. I'm the center of the universe. Please, you know, let me get out of this hell. But if we're in the consciousness that I'm the servant of Krishna, Krishna, you're helping me, you're assisting me with your devotion, and rather than being degraded, we can feel transcendental ecstasy. We're not bothered by it. There's one famous quote of Lord Buddha. I know this is a Bhagavatam class. I know that GBC is here, Tamahar. But I'm just quoting this because I'm quoting this because Sridhar Swami always used to quote it, and it's quite relevant to what we're discussing. Lord Buddha used to say that distress is compulsory, whereas suffering is optional. Okay, so you can see there's a little nuance of difference between the words distress and suffering. Okay, suffering is the, oh, woe is me. You know, distress is going to happen. When Prabhupada was in his final days in Vrindavan, and the doctors that were attending him were just flabbergasted that he wasn't crying for morphine. And they inquired from him, now, how is it, Srila Prabhupada, that you're completely oblivious to the distresses that anybody in your condition would be undergoing? And so Prabhupada quoted the, is it the fourth verse of the 10th canto? I think it is. Nivata tarsher upagiyamana bhavo sadaksh chotra manobirama ka utama shloka gunanuvada pumanvira jeta vinapushugna. So the glorification of the Supreme Lord, it's performed in the parampara system. And bhavo sadaksh chotra, Manobirama. It's the right medicine for the conditioned soul undergoing repeated birth and death. So he was so absorbed in translating the books right up to the end, he didn't experience this. Just like there's another really relevant verse, the third canon, 21st chapter. This is Kapila Dev to Devahuti, just before the famous Satam Prasangam Mamavirya Samvido verse, 23. That's 25. This is 23. See if I can remember. Marashraya kata mishta shrinvanti kata yanti cha tapanti vivadas tapa naitan madgata chetasaha. A devotee doesn't suffer from material miseries because he's fully absorbed in hearing and chanting about my glories. So the material miseries are there, but he doesn't suffer because he's absorbed in Krishna consciousness. He's within the antaranga shakti. So we have that choice. We can choose our response to distressful circumstances and become elevated by it. And it's actually, we can understand, just like to increase the ecstasy and the depth of his relationship with Rukmini, Krishna, you know, teased her, you know, spoke really heavy words to her. So Krishna does a similar thing with us. He puts us in distressful circumstances. We undergo tribulations. He does that to deepen our relationship with him. This is how if we see it that way, not a big deal. It's assistant to our devotional service, these distressful circumstances. Okay, let me stop here. Maybe there's some comments or questions or chastisements. Yes, Mataji, wait for the microphone. It's coming your way over here. Oh, Kalyapani, please. Go ahead.
You've attempted to show us how this statement about distress being bhava applies to us. One could argue, though, that this applies to the advanced devotees.
Well, this is the okay.
Who don't make mistakes, who don't err and dabble in material nature. But this is simply, you know, our own kind of limited karma coming. That, you know, Queen Kunti was not the cause of the distress that happened to her. So she knows that it's Krishna coming as distress. And therefore, because bhav is an experience, we're not experiencing that.
Okay, so let me backtrack then. Let me read from, this is page 151 of Nectar Devotion. I guess I didn't make this clear. The different types of rasa, when combined together, help one to taste the mellow of devotional service in the highest degree of transcendental ecstasy. Such a position, although entirely transcendental to our experience, will be explained in this section as far as possible, following in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami. So very difficult to understand. Okay. So then, Prabhupada goes on to say, on page 152, generally this mellow is experienced by chanting, hearing, worshiping in the temple, and being engaged in the service of the Lord. He's not describing the bhava platform. He's describing for us, so that we can connect with it, you know, the platform of a sadhaka, how there is some relish there, so we can just extrapolate to what the person, the devotee on the bhava, the prema platform is experiencing. So another response, so that's one point. You know, I'm just kind of following in the footsteps of what Prabhupada did in unpacking this discussion on rasa. And then another point is, for someone who takes up devotional service, karmani, nirdahati, chintu, kintu, chak, bhakti, bhajan, he's not under the laws of karma anymore. And Prabhupada, you know, I can give you the reference, I can look it up, but he says, it's in the fourth canto, the time of initiation, the spiritual master takes on the karma, takes away the karma from the disciples. He's not in the laws of karma anymore. And then in a conversation with Giriraj Swami, he said that at the time, you know, at this point, you know, when the fans unplugged, Krishna takes charge of the reactions, of the sinful reactions of the devotee. He takes it out of the devotee's account. Okay? He puts it into his own account, and he uses those sinful reactions as needed to help the devotee progress in Krishna consciousness. So I'm not, you know, I'm sorry if I gave that impression that what I'm describing is on the bhava platform. It's not on the bhava platform. But what I'm doing is describing the capacity that Krishna has to reciprocate for those on the bhava or the prema platform. But he's also doing something, you know, on the green mango platform with us. He's also reciprocating with us in something that could be seen to be somewhat similar ways. You know, there's this prompting, you know, to wake up, turn to him, go deeper in the relationship that comes through our distresses. If we handle it in that way, the distress is really not a big thing. It's something that we can go through and stay fairly fixed in our Krishna consciousness. Want more doubts? Okay, go ahead.
What challenges? That we're plugging the fan in again. And that's why we're suffering. And
well,
and that may not be directly Krishna coming with the bhav.
Okay. So what Prabhupada says about plugging the fan in again, because I've searched this on folio on multiple occasions, is that if one stops following the order of the spiritual master, then there's a replugging that takes place. If one continues to follow, and then it's just the spinning after the fan's unplugged, that's controlled by Krishna. That's his mercy on us. That's his loving exchange. That's the bhav that we can experience with him. Yes, Adide. Oh, and
please define follow, because
I'm sorry?
Please define follow, because I know in my own life I'm off and on. I mean, you know, it's like thoughts come in, you grab for, you know, some gratification from a thought or from a deed or from some external thing. So theoretically, then you're not following. So then,
Prabhu, can you back up a little bit and speak super clearly? I'm not quite hearing.
I'm sorry.
It.
I'm
not
just
your
trying
fault,
to.
My fault.
I'm trying to understand follow.
Bhava?
Follow. How we follow Prabhupada.
Oh, follow
so
Prabhupada.
That,
okay,
yeah,
okay, okay.
We'll follow Krishna so that the fan is unplugged. And you're saying that every time we don't follow, well, then the fan's plugged back in.
No. Okay, so look. Just because we undergo distresses doesn't mean the fan is plugged back in. Okay? Let's make that clear. Okay, is that clear? That point. Okay, so there's certain, you know, 16 rounds, regulative principles, having the sadhana standard that Prabhupada encouraged. You know, we're unplugged then, you know, and the fan's spinning, so we may undergo distresses. But just following the core instructions that he gave us, then we're not under the laws of karma. Even though incredibly heavy things may happen in our lives. I know of a Mataji in Mayapur that it takes her about 10 minutes to take a spoon of prasadam and bring it from the plate to her mouth because she's got such severe Parkinson's disease. But yet every day she goes out and distributes Prabhupada's books. She's not under the law of karma. She's actually in very good spirits. She's in ecstasy. Her biggest anxiety is that somehow she can't serve Srila Prabhupada enough. But she's not under the law of karma. She's not plugged in. Is that clear? Okay.
Hi, Krishna. Yes. Putting your vases is very nice class. Good explanation.
Okay, now you're going to have to speak super loud. I'm a deaf old man. I'm a hearing aid just came up front.
Okay. Hare Krishna Prabhu. I said my obeisances. Very nice class. I was reading the Bhagavatam last night, and, you know, fourth canto, and it was explaining how we just don't react to things that are coming to us, you know, because of our false ego, or react to bad situations. It's very difficult to not react. And how is, after practicing so many years, is false ego still so very huge, big, like a big, well, not to react, but I mean, perhaps it's just don't react to it. If you just don't react to things that are not pleasing, then you'll be able to see clearly what, you know, Krishna consciousness and experience that, you know, that love for Krishna there is so difficult. So just...
Well, you know, that the... I mean, we are who we are, right? So when we don't respond maybe to stimuli in a Krishna conscious way, that can be positive for us because it encourages us to be more humble, okay? And it also, you know, the part of the distresses that Krishna, it's not that Krishna doesn't also have, isn't also controlling our minds, you know, I mean, he's there, you know, I mean, he'll help us. He'll, if we have strong spiritual intelligence, then it's real easy to do. But you know, the point is that when we freak out, quote, when we don't handle things in an with equanimity, that's impetus for us to cry to the holy name and go deeper and deeper, and from going deeper, then more and more equanimity comes. More and more pure, we can accelerate the rate with which we're purifying. We can accelerate, you know, how fast we advance in Krishna consciousness. Or, you know, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur used to tell the story, you know, of how there was a wedding party, and you know, the boatman was rowing all night, and then when the sun came up, you know, everybody on the wedding party that was on the boat was completely disturbed that they were in the same location that they were when the boatman started rowing. And then they noticed that the anchor was still, you know, there. You know, he hadn't pulled the anchor up. It was still tied down, you know, so they couldn't go anyplace. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur likened that to, you know, still maintaining an enjoying spirit. This is what retards our advancement. You know, to do this, you know, if we're regularly studying, we're regularly hearing, I'm Krishna's servant, our japa meditation is all, I'm Krishna's servant, please engage me in your service. We dissipate this ahankara very quickly. We can make very rapid advancement that way. But that crying, you know, that's what really, you know, brings Krishna's mercy, and we cry to the holy name. This is the Yuga Dharma, and we got an awful lot to cry about. And the more introspective and honest we are with ourselves in our own position, then the more we can cry. Yeah, I'll tell you just one before, just one real nice reference. This is from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhajan Rahasya. This is a couplet. I believe it's 1.52 and 1.53, where he describes that one who fails to try and free himself from anarthas meets only with misfortune in this lifetime and doesn't achieve the mercy of the holy name. Okay? So, how do you try to free yourself from anarthas? First thing is to be really honest with yourself. You're being really honest with yourself. Sometimes I got so much false ego and this and that. Okay. So then that honesty, when we take a good look at ourselves, we read Prabhupada's books and we understand the workings of the mind of a genuine devotee, we measure ourselves against that standard, we see we're a long ways off, creates humility, which is very helpful in chanting. Okay, next verse in Bhajan Rahasya. On his own, this sounds almost self-contradictory. On one's own, one cannot free himself from anarthas. But if he cries to the holy name for several days, the holy name will remove all anarthas from his heart. So this, our path is not aroha panta. It's not, you know, self-made man get to the top. It's avaroha panta. We depend upon descending mercy. We depend upon descending knowledge. It comes in parampara. We do our service. We try our best with our sadhana. We try. You know, this is, you know, sincerity. Prabhupada would say sincerity is the key to success in Krishna consciousness. And he says in the preface to Nectar of Instruction, advancement in Krishna consciousness is dependent upon the attitude of the follower. So this humble attitude of just wanting to be your servant, Krishna, I'm sick and tired of trying to be the center of the universe, trying to be your competitor. It's just not a pleasant situation at all. I'm out of whack, I'm out of sync with where I want to be. So help me. And that's how you get the help, is sincere chanting. Yes, Mataji.
Thank you. Very nice class. Along the lines of Kalyapani Prabhu and Adidev Prabhu, so in our lives, we've all been in extreme situations, suffering, and knowing that we're getting purified and that this is Krishna's grace upon us. Sometimes I and God sisters, God brothers, remember what Srila Prabhupada would say, and he would say sometimes, no, that's not Krishna's mercy, that's your stupidity. So I've been in, you know, we have choices to make. We have children, we have marriages, we have health issues, we have businesses, and sometimes we make some really stupid choices, and then you get tricked up, like, then how do I see that as Krishna's mercy? I just made a really foolish choice, and I'm suffering, and other people are suffering.
Well, you know, the you know, in the Tattva Nukam Pam Sukshamiksamano, the translation, one always seeks your compassion and thus tolerates all kinds of adverse conditions, understanding that they're coming about as a result of one's past misdeeds. So there's accountability. It's not that you're just... But so then the reaction to your stupidity, as you describe it, is this distress. So we learn from that. And also the distress, you know, usually the stupid decisions are based upon an improper orientation, that I'm the center of the universe, I want to enjoy. This is what, you know, blocks intelligent decision-making usually. So if we're keyed in, you know, we get super empowerment, you know, to make intelligent decisions when we're in this service mood. Like, here's a, you know, there's, like Prabhupada, you know, before he came to the United States, he went to Advaita Bhavan, and he was just crying. This is a pujari that reported. I think it was read by Mukhya. You know, before, you know, he was crying to the holy name. You know, he wanted to be empowered to do the impossible of following the spiritual master's order of spreading Krishna consciousness throughout the world. He was just begging for it. He was just begging, Krishna, please empower me. So, you know, and then in Prabhupada, another point that he makes, and, you know, he was asked by Savas, I'm not speaking in any fruitive way when I'm saying this. In 1975 in Atlanta, all the Radhadamodar bus party was there, and the BBT party was there, and you were there, and Savas asked Srila Prabhupada, how can we increase our devotion and our enthusiasm to distribute your books? And Prabhupada just looked up at this feeling, and there was this, you know, things were in suspended animation. And he was just reflecting, and just, it was very, you know, silent. And just, and everyone was just kind of expecting that magic formula. And then Prabhupada responded by saying, if you really want to increase book distribution, and then he repeated it, if you really want to increase book distribution, then you'll chant your rounds without interruption. You'll chant your rounds until you finish them before you do anything else like that. So I'm not saying this in any kind of fruitive way, and he obviously wasn't responding in a fruitive way. But the point is this,
If we want to have strong spiritual intelligence, we should follow that formula every single day of our lives. And then we won't be all bewildered. You know, spiritual intelligence comes because when you make this type of prioritization in your life, you're going to be much more likely to be within the Antaranga Shakti. When you're in the Antaranga Shakti, then, you know, the modes aren't kicking you around and pushing you into areas that you'd rather not be in. And of course, to strengthen the spiritual intelligence and to chant properly, the Sambandha Gyan has to be regularly fortified by regularly studying Prabhupada's books. Jai Govinda Prabhu.
In the discussion regarding the fan being plugged in, not being plugged in, and whether it's Krishna acting or karma, and if we're not following, then it's not Krishna, it's karma like that. But Krishna also acts in those, in the lives of those who have given up following many times.
So that's true, and there's a series of verses that describe this. So, you know, there's these fine points, you know, in the philosophy, and sometimes Prabhupada will say something here, and he'll say something that seems to be in a different mood in a different location. So, anyway, the principle is that, you know, Prabhupada has the potency to free us all of karma. You know, and if we take that seriously, then that's what's actually taken place. If we consciously break that relationship with him, then, you know, we may eventually be reinstated, but it's not, you know, that's not the tack, it's the advisable one. You know, so, you know, I'm trying to think of the verse, 1.727, something like that, 1.320, I can't remember. But it's like, you know, there's a description of how when one falls down, then he doesn't become like a regular karmi. And then there is this chaktvasu dharmam charanam bhujam hare bhujana apapvota patatoyod. But there's another one where it's described, he doesn't become a karmi. So, you know, he's still under the Lord's protection, but he may be under the laws of karma too. You know, I don't know. I mean, there's different acharyas say different things, you know, and throughout Prabhupada's books there's different points that are made that karma is taken by this and karma is taken by that. But Prabhupada, you know, his Mahavakyam was at the time of initiation. So, and that may be understood, you know, by there's this really remarkable verse, 10.2.31, which Krishna, there's a description of how the acharya discovers the ways and means to cross the ferocious ocean of material existence. And he leaves that means behind for other devotees. And Krishna accepts those means for the benefit of these other devotees. So the point is that there's time, place, and circumstance adjustments that are made. Prabhupada said this. He is the most advanced acharya in the history of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And Krishna will stand behind it. But he did say, as long as one's following. So, we should follow. If we slip, not a big deal. There's no prayaschitta. We just pick ourselves up and go back in. You know, and that's overlooked very, very quickly by Krishna. Yes, by Krishna. I think we should end. One last question. I may get in trouble. So much hot air here.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for your lecture. What is the responsibility of devotees with suffering and distress caused by demonic activities that it may impact them either directly or indirectly?
Well, you know, if it's demoniac, if there is continuing to be demoniac activity, stop it. If it's from the past, assume responsibility for it and just take shelter of the holy name and let the holy name guide us and take us ahead.
Well, I'm referring to activities in the world, not their own activities.
Right. Well, you know, this is Kali Yuga. You know, our main business is to do our best to. Here's a good shloka to respond to this. Naivo Dvijay Pada. This is Palad Maharaj, ninth chapter of the seventh canto. Naivo Dvijay Pada Dratiya Vaitaranyas Twad Virya Gayana Mahamita Mangmachita Sucheta Tovi Mukachita Sa Indriyarta Maya Sukaya Baram Urvahato Vibudham. Oh, best of the great personalities, I'm not at all afraid of material existence. That's one point. For wherever I am, there's two translations, one's in CC and one in Bhagavatam. The CC one is like really relishable, so I'm going to use that. And it says, for wherever I am, I'm fully absorbed in chanting your holy name and absorbed in the bliss of Krishna consciousness. But what I am concerned with love in my heart for those fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness is material happiness and for maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I'm simply concerned with love for them. So he should do his best to try and deliver these people because they're going to suffer like anything from their demonic activities, and they already are. So, okay? Goes to Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.